views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. So glad you joined us here today on KKNW AM 1150 here in the Seattle area, or on Transformation Talk Radio around the world, or on one of the, I think it's up to 90 internationally syndicated stations.
90.
Yahoo! Or in the archives on ChristineUpchurch.com. But I tell you, whenever and wherever you're listening from, you're going to be grateful you joined us here today, because we're going to be talking about something in a way we've never talked about consciousness and transformation before. But before I tell you about that, because I always like to give you a teaser, I want to say hello to my better half here in the studio, who allows you to hear these wonderful conversations, Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
Hi, right up and to the start.
I know.
That's
it's like
how we roll today.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes we have, every once in a long while, we have issues contacting our guest, which, and I'm like pulling out some notes. It's like, okay, if I have to roll on this on my own, I can do it. But let me shift gears here. But gratefully, with your magic and technology, we've got connection.
Give myself a ding for that one. Yay, good job, Benny.
Yay, Benny.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and you know, I am excited about our show today, Benny, because we are going to be talking about quantum physics as it applies to our daily lives, as it applies to transformation. I know I talk about that a little bit with the vibration of change, those workshops that I teach, what I talked about on Wednesday on the Dr. Pat show. However, this is new and different, and I'm really excited about this. Our guest today is Mel Schwartz. He is a psychotherapist and a marriage counselor in private practice in Westport, Connecticut, and Manhattan for over 20 years. He's an emerging voice in the world of personal transformation for good reason. One of the first practicing psychotherapists to integrate principles of quantum physics into the psychotherapeutic approach. And when you read his book and when you hear what he has to say, you're going to be amazed at how that shift in perception and shift in approach can really help to transform you much more quickly. He earned his graduate degree from Columbia University. When I was at Rutgers working on my doctoral dissertation in mathematical statistics, in my previous life, I actually spent a semester going to Columbia because my advisor was there. So I went there.
Perfect.
And, he's the author of The Art of Intimacy, The Pleasure of Passion, and his new book, which is really exciting, called The Possibility Principle, how quantum physics can improve the way you think, live, and love. He also blogs for Psychology Today. He's written over 100 articles, read by more than 1.5 million people, and he offers supervisions and trainings for those in the helping professions to bring his perspective and these new approaches to help many others. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Mel Schwartz. Hi, Mel. So grateful we got you here.
Well, Christina, I'm excited to be with you today.
You know, I'm always curious about how a person goes from like where they're at once upon a time to where they're at now. And, you know, clearly you've been in the psychotherapy, you know, practice for many years, for decades. When and why did you shift to sort of look at the quantum physics and apply that to the psychotherapy?
Well, this shift for me occurred actually concurrently, about the same time that I was moving into practicing therapy. This is my second career. My first career had been in business. It was gratifying financially, but my business was unfulfilling in terms of meaning and purpose. So I had one of those defining moments in life.
Right.
and I decided to choose a new path, which was to practice therapy. Well, that decision actually provoked a divorce in my life, and I found myself in the early stages of divorce, separated. And although my children lived with me primarily on this particular day, they were with their mom, and I was missing them very much. I went out for a bike ride on a beautiful spring day. And to my surprise, I started to have an anxiety attack. I was just feeling unsettled about the future. I went home, pulled a book off the shelf called The Turning Point by Krzysztof Kapra.
A classic.
A quantum physicist. Yes, a very classic. And that book was a turning point for me. I started to read about this new paradigm of reality, similar to what mystical traditions told us, but now coming from science, that reality in the universe was essentially inseparable and full of possibility and bubbling with potential and uncertain. And I noticed within a few minutes, I was no longer feeling anxious. More than that, I was completely connected. And over time, I saw that had such a profound impact on me, I began to shift my beliefs and my thinking. Mm-hmm. So it was only that my approach as a therapist. And I found that for your listeners, I am no scientist. I was mediocre in science. These are simple principles. One, reality is uncertain. Mm-hmm. And it's actually good news because uncertain equals possibility.
Right. And most of us think that's terrifying and bad news.
Yes. We spend our lives warding off uncertainty. I find that when you get addicted to certainty, which you can never achieve, that results in anxiety. Our anxiety disorders are about our minds trying to calculate the future, which doesn't allow us to be present and create stress. So the converse is if you're open to uncertainty, everything's wide open. It's full of potential.
Right. And somehow we've been programmed to think that opening up to possibility actually is very dangerous, and we don't view it as full of potential. But what does quantum physics say about that?
Well, if you think about it, if things are predictable and determined, as we were taught by 17th century thinkers like Newton, if things are determined and we know what the future is going to bring, then that precludes possibility, doesn't it? You see, a core issue that people struggle with in their lives is change.
Right.
People feel stuck in your relationships, in your work, in some aspect of your personality. You feel stuck.
Right.
Feeling stuck means I need something new.
Mm-hmm.
I have to reach into the uncertain to bring forth something new. If I hadn't stepped into uncertainty, I wouldn't be sitting here talking with you and your listeners today.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be back in my own business because I couldn't guarantee what the results of my decision would be.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, Mel, because I know that there are people out there who think that they're very happy with what is in their lives. Do you have this perspective that even when people are satisfied that there is a need or an inner yearning for change?
I believe that the majority of people may act as though they're perfectly content, but that's in some cases, that's out of fear of opening up Pandora's box. Because once they admit to others that they're yearning for something more, that leaves them feeling vulnerable, exposed. And people tend to think that everyone else is happy, and it's just you that's struggling. So we hide from each other in that way, and it makes no sense at all. We're all reaching for something a little beyond our fingertips at the moment, and that's a good and a healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
We should take ownership of that. That's growth.
So do you think that growing up that sometimes we get shamed for wanting something different or wanting something more?
Some people do. It depends upon your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, I discuss how we come to the core beliefs we have about ourselves. And there are messages that we get in childhood. You know, in quantum physics, there's something called the quantum wave collapse, where the potential collapses and things become finite or specific.
Uh-huh.
And I thought metaphorically in our lives, same thing happens to us. We come into life with great potential. But certain things happen or are said to us. They could be subtle or they could be traumatic.
Right.
And they begin to constrain and limit our view of ourselves. We develop beliefs like, I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not lovable. We get stuck in victimhood. And the problem is if we don't believe in new possibilities, if we don't believe in our ability to emerge, we live out our lives stuck in that way. It doesn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is really exciting. And, you know, we want to hear lots more about this, but we have to go to a quick break. More with Mel Schwartz and the Possibility Principle when we return here in just a few moments.
Crashing waves, sparkling, they take me back to you.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
The goal for the Art of Powerful Living Radio is to inspire every human to live lives that are rich, fulfilling, on purpose, and fun. This hit show with Robert Schoenfeld is a fresh approach to boldly living our lives with creativity, courage, patience, wisdom, love, and power. Join Robert every month with Dr. Pat Baselli for the Art of Powerful Living Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's
425-999-9836. Me back to you again. Distant shores on the horizon, where you'll be waiting.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, I'm very excited about this topic, taking quantum physics and applying it to our own processes and our daily lives. You know, Mel, you talked about the importance of embracing uncertainty. What is there? Can you share with our listeners about the Heisenberg principle and how that applies to what you're talking about here?
Certainly. Great question. Before I get to Heisenberg, let me go back to Newton.
Okay.
Newton told us that if we have enough information, we can reasonably predict the future. That was called determinism. Today, instead of information, we may think substitute the word data. Now, as I explained before, when we get overwhelmed with trying to predict the future, we're actually not navigating life. We're standing still.
Uh-huh.
In 1927, I believe, a German physicist named Heisenberg developed the uncertainty principle. He discovered that on the quantum realm, you could not attain all available information, that you actually had intruded into their reality, and you couldn't know all things. This became known as the uncertainty principle. This was revolutionary in our understanding of reality. Things weren't certain. We were participating in what, that with which we were observing. We weren't separate and apart, which actually led us to understand that there's no such thing as objectivity.
Uh-huh.
Now, today, science is revealing that this uncertainty principle exists in our everyday lives equally. So we've been living by the wrong game plan.
Okay, so
the game plan induces fear and anxiety. Instead of this game plan of embracing uncertainty because that's reality and opening up to navigating life.
So tell me how the uncertainty principle actually applies to an aspect of daily life.
Well, let's look at relationships.
Okay.
Oscar Wilde said, uncertainty is the essence of romance. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Because romance, being present, being alive, means nothing's predictable.
Uh-huh.
You're hanging on every word. Do I love her? Does she love me? We'll see.
Uh-huh.
As soon as we secure the relationship, the tendency is to move toward predictability. That's why passion dies over time.
Uh-huh.
Predictability kills eros and passion. Uncertainty, and I don't mean dangerous uncertainty,
uh-huh.
but the uncertainty of mixing things up. You know, if you know where and when your sex life is going to unfold, it's not quite as exciting.
Right.
And in our conversations with each other, if we don't let each other finish a sentence and ask some questions and not assume that we know with certainty
mm-hmm.
what the other one's thinking, then our relationships get stagnant. We stop learning and we stop growing.
Right.
So that's just one aspect.
Uh-huh.
Another aspect is our relationship with our thoughts. You know, I've come to believe, and I wrote in my book, that the most important relationship you will ever have isn't with your parents, your children,
mm-hmm.
your spouse, your partner. The relationship that will impact you more than any other relationship is with your thoughts.
I love that concept, Mel. I really do.
So, given that, we need to turn our thoughts into our ally.
Uh-huh.
If we're not aware of our thoughts, and our thoughts keep speaking to us with the same predictions and certainty, then we can't access that potential. It is a nanosecond between your thoughts. In that nanosecond, you exist in a state of pure potential. But if you keep having the same old thoughts, you never access that potential.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach the reader and my clients how to grab a hold of that nanosecond and extend it so it feels like a few moments and learn to think differently.
So that sounds simple on the surface, but it feels like that is a very, maybe a difficult thing to implement. How would you go about doing that?
Well, without being too glib, I suggest reading the book.
Yes.
You see, I have an issue with books that say, you know, the six steps to this or the
uh-huh.
five easy steps to that. It's not that it's hard. It's just that nobody has ever taught us. But just to give you a few basic ideas. When you hear somebody knocking at the door, you're aware there's a knock at the door. You can decide to answer and open the door or not.
Uh-huh.
Well, I teach the reader how to see and hear their old thoughts knocking at the door of their awareness. When you can develop a muscle memory and see the thought, you don't have to become the thought.
Uh-huh.
You can become a person who is having the thought. Then you're in charge. You're in a higher level than being imprisoned by old thoughts. So it's developing a muscle memory and a technique to see your thought, which
mm-hmm.
is actually thinking. When you can see your thoughts, you're thinking. Otherwise, we have several million thoughts. We're imprisoned by them. They trick us in that they're telling us the truth, and that's why we struggle with change.
So how do our thoughts affect the quantum mechanics of our reality?
Our thoughts, the moment you have a thought, the thought summons up an accompanying emotion. thought and feelings go together.
Sure.
So the reality we experience is filtered by our thoughts and feelings. You know, whether you see somebody and like them or dislike them, love them or hate them, is all informed by your thoughts and impressions and how you categorize them, mm-hmm. or your memory of previous experiences
sure.
of them. So our brain doesn't produce consciousness. We've got it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it this way. If you're walking at the beach and you look behind you and you see your footprint in the sand didn't produce your footprint. Your foot left its mark in the sand.
Uh-huh.
Your thoughts leave their mark on your brain. Your thoughts impact your brain chemistry,
mm-hmm.
which I see is good news because, you see, we're not hardwired.
Right.
We don't have to medicate ourselves to overcome anxiety and depression. We need to learn to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're no longer at the mercy of our brain chemistry.
Right. Well, when you talk about things like anxiety and depression, it brings up the topic of diagnosing. And I know that people are often very attached to their diagnosis or somebody else's diagnosis and what maybe even the pharmaceutical industry would say about how to treat that diagnosis. How do you feel about that kind of categorization of symptoms?
Well, there's a chapter in my book devoted to diagnosis. I wrote an article called Diagnosis Disorder,
mm-hmm.
which is that the DSM,
right.
which is the Bible that creates diagnosis, has a disorder. And here's what it is. A team of psychiatrists gets together and they discuss some new behavior or some new phenomenon, they say, and they put some words together to describe it, like years ago, ADHD. Using the term as a description of what we think we're seeing is fine.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the psychiatrist and the psychologist in the pharmaceutical industry forget it's just a description. They turn the description into a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So John has ADHD, and I'll say he can't have it. It's a description of what you're seeing. It
mm-hmm.
isn't a real thing. Now, turning diagnoses into real things creates untold billions of dollars worth of profit.
Sure.
And it turns people into victims. So, of course, we struggle and suffer with anxiety and with depression, but we're human beings. Turning the person into a thing is to victimize them.
Right.
So I don't work that way.
And that's disempowering, too. It's very disempowering.
Tremendously. And so I work with people in regard to what is the depression telling us?
Uh-huh.
There's something awry in your life. You know, depression comes from a feeling of being disconnected and isolated, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I could have predicted if I were older or a generation older, I could have predicted we'd have an epidemic of depression. You see, go back to 17th century science. Newton's worldview was that reality was like a giant machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the mechanistic or machine-like universe. And from that picture, we are separate cogs in a disconnected machine.
Sure.
Lifeless, without meaning, without mm-hmm. purpose, without connection. That is depressing.
Yeah,
quantum
it
physics,
is.
Terribly. Quantum physics tells us that reality is essentially inseparable. As mind-boggling as that may seem,
mm-hmm.
it seems so. The universe and reality is as one inseparable whole. That means I'm not disconnected. I have meaning and purpose, and everything I say or do impacts everything else. I find that the people I work with get great relief from depression by shifting their worldview into one of connectivity as opposed to separation.
Wow. So I do find it kind of interesting how there seems to be a lot of people experiencing what we would call depression, those, you know, sets of symptoms. And yet we live in a world where we have internet connection. We've got social media connection. We've got instant information going across the planet. How can that happen in this kind of scenario?
Well, I think that the internet can serve to help some people feel more connected,
mm-hmm.
but it has the opposite effect for others. because rather than go out and try to experience face-to-face communication, and this is even more so with teenagers and people in their 20s, I've gone into a restaurant and seen a couple together on what I thought was perhaps a date, and they sit there in silence for long periods of time as they're each connected to their own device.
Wow.
So although it increases our ability to digest and consume data and information, it has the opposite effect on relationships and connecting with one another.
Right. So what's the solution for us to like live within this kind of technological, Disneyland, so to speak, and yet make sure we're connecting with other people?
Well, you, instead of simply seeking data, or for many people looking to see how many likes they're getting on their feeds or on Facebook, it's to use the internet and to use the social media as an opportunity for fostering new relationships. For example, several weeks ago, I was interviewed for a podcast. A young man up in Martha's Vineyard. And we just had a great energy going during this interview. So afterwards, we got in touch with each other. We're going to get together. I assume we'll be able to generate a friendship. So we didn't just leave it there. I look at the technology and the internet as a means toward an end, which is if I can develop and foster new relationships, then it serves me well.
Right. This is fascinating, and we have to go to another quick break, but more with Mel Schwartz and the Possibility Principle when we return.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Hi there. My name is Audrey Michelle, host of Rewired Life Radio and a spiritual growth coach. I talk about this all the time on my show, listening to your body and acting on intuition. What do these things even mean? Here's the thing. About 10 years ago, I figured out I was doing it all wrong. I mean, I wasn't unhappy, but was I really happy? And then life sent me a spiritual smackdown, like it does, because I wasn't listening to my best resource, my body and my intuition. I was living from a place of fear. I was stressed and I was in pain, and I seemed to be happily unhappy. Mostly, I just didn't know what I didn't know. And what I didn't know was that my body and my intuition had all the tools I needed to live life as my best self. I'm sharing the tools I have learned over the last 10 years of my healing journey in my online class, Soul Awakening, beginning September 19th. Learn more. Go to audreymichelle.com/awaken. That's Audrey Michelle, spelled michelle.com/awaken.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com. Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a wonderful conversation today with Mel Schwartz. He's the author of several books, including his latest, The Possibility Principle, how he's connecting quantum physics into daily life and how we approach living. You know, on the break, you and I were talking about how that I've been in this sort of strange mode recently. You know, when I used to ask myself on some level, like, who am I? And I had all these things laid out, like, I'm this, I'm that, I'm a mother, I'm a healer, I'm a teacher, blah, 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 you know. And now it's kind of like, who am I? Brings up a whole different thing. It's like, I have no idea. It's like, I don't even want to put my finger on it. And I know that you talk about this question, who am I? What's your perspective on that question, Mel?
About 10 years ago, I wrote an article called Who Am I? And in that article, I wrote, that's the wrong question to ask. Who am I necessitates that there's a fixed, definitive, limited response to who am I. You're constrained.
Uh-huh.
The question we should be asking ourselves is, how would I like to experience my life? See, that's forward moving. In my book, I talk about, there's a chapter called From Being to Becoming.
Uh-huh.
Instead of being stuck as a fixed being, we can move into a state of becoming, ever evolving. So you talked about a former career, and I spoke about a former marriage and my former job. My sense of identity is my engagement with life, with process, with change, and with passion. So I don't want to be limited in that way. People who ask, who am I, typically are struggling around, who should I be?
Right.
That's the key. Authenticity. I'm often asked, what does this word authentic mean?
Uh-huh.
To me, to be authentic means that I don't wear any masks or disguises, that I can share reasonably and with sensitivity my thoughts and feelings.
I love that. You're saying what you're not with authenticity. No masks.
No. If you are acting and living authentically, you wear no mask, no disguises. In other words, it doesn't mean you're not sensitive to what other people may think, but you're not going to betray yourself or alter or modify yourself to avoid disapproval or to get people to approve of you.
Mm-hmm.
As a culture, we struggle with terrible low self-esteem. I believe, by the way, that low self-esteem is at the core of most of those diagnoses that we discussed earlier. Low self-esteem manifests as anxiety and depression and even ADHD.
Uh-huh.
But there's no diagnosis for low self-esteem. Now, we don't understand the term low self-esteem or self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
Most people think self-esteem comes from what will give your children self-esteem, good grades, being great in sports, being popular.
Mm-hmm.
All those things come from outside of you.
Right.
I call that other esteem.
Uh-huh.
Self-esteem is, what's my relationship with me?
Right.
If you feel concerned or worried about what other people will think of you, if you stumble or halt or modify what you're going to say because you're concerned about what you think they think, that's a signal that you want to address your self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Authenticity means that it doesn't mean you're faultless or perfect.
Uh-huh.
It simply means that you give yourself permission to be you.
Right. And that's huge, because it seems to me that we are brought up in a world, at least in Western culture, we're brought up in a world where we're told over and over again how inappropriate it is for us to be ourselves. Including starting at a young age, you were talking about ADHD before. I'm very concerned about, you know, all these kids who are kinesthetic in nature, who are being drugged because they don't fit in with the style of teaching that they want to do in public schools.
Were a kid today, he never would have become Albert Einstein,
yes,
because they would have medicated him.
Oh.
And again, it's just the inclination to throw labels on people and to throw medication at them. There are so many reasons that somebody may be acting from ADHD. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was working with a young man who was being had been diagnosed and was being medicated for ADHD.
Uh-huh.
But I got to know him on a deeper level. And I found that when he was studying or reading a book, he had this thought going through his mind that other people are smarter. He's so dumb. Why can't he understand what he's reading? Mm-hmm. And that would cause him to distract himself and get away from the book.
Uh-huh.
They only looked at the symptom. He's distracted. He's running away from his book. So they medicated him.
Right.
That wasn't his issue. That was just a symptom.
Uh-huh.
It was the self-esteem piece that's underneath it.
Right, right. And you have to wonder if you looked at that thought about, you know, not being able to be as good at reading as somebody else, then you know, if you look at that, then you think, okay, well, maybe there's an issue here with the way I read. You know, maybe there, I'm like, you know, people have all sorts of problems with reading and they think that there's something wrong with them when in fact it's just they process things differently.
That's often the case. And in some cases, the problem with their reading is that they have a belief that they're not smart enough or good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that thought is going through your mind, what's wrong with me, at the same time that you're trying to read, we know what the result will be.
Yeah, yeah.
You won't be able to read well. So our thoughts and beliefs become self-fulfilling prophecies. But the good news is we can learn to break through that and become the master of the thinking where we see the old thoughts and we don't attach to them.
You know, Mel, in your book, there are many stories of people who have shifted dramatically through some of these approaches. Could you share one of these stories with us, please?
Sure. I was working with a man in his late 30s, early 40s, happily married with children, mm-hmm. had a good job.
Uh-huh.
And he was beset with anxiety, terrible anxiety. And his anxiety would be with thought around certainty. For example, he'd come in for a session, he'd say, I'm giving a presentation at work on Friday. I'm so worried. I've been rehearsing it. I've been practicing it. I don't know if it's good enough. What will they think? He needed certainty that it would go over well.
Right.
There was no certainty.
Uh-huh.
He had anxiety. He was in a loving relationship with his wife, but he had a fear. How do I know she'll always love me?
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him an exercise. I created this exercise on the spot. I had him close his eyes, and we created a visualization. I told him to picture that we were standing by the side of the river. And I asked him to imagine that the river, the flow, was the current of life.
Uh-huh.
The current of the river was the flow of life. I said, imagine yourself now walking into the river with me and going toward the middle where the current picks up. His eyes were closed, and I asked him what he was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm in the middle, but I just grabbed a hold of this big boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why? He said, well, the river bends to the right up ahead, and I can't see where it's going. I said, that's your future. You can't know where it's going. Mm-hmm. But if you let go and you get into the flow of life, you are free to navigate as we go along. But if you're holding back the flow, you can't get there. You have to embrace the uncertainty. It worked for him. He told me his new password on a lot of his digital equipment was embrace.
So
it's paradoxical. We have to do the opposite of what we've been trained to do.
So is it really that simple just to embrace uncertainty? I mean,
well, you know, it's not simple, but it's not hard. When I'm working with somebody to make change and to embrace uncertainty, they may say, it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, how do you know? Have you ever tried this? No. They're having a thought that's telling them it's hard to do.
Right.
And they'll come back the next week and I'll ask what their progress was. And they may say, well, it makes me feel uncomfortable. I'll say, well, you go to the gym and work out with a trainer, don't you? Yes. Doesn't that get uncomfortable physically?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So we have to change our relationship with discomfort. Just like we can do that on physical levels, if we learn to do that on emotional and psychological levels and say, so it's uncomfortable, So what? If we invite the discomfort and invite the uncertainty, then it's full speed ahead. There's nothing that gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only uncomfortable for a very little while.
And when you talk about that kind of discomfort, it also brings up for me this concept of vulnerability. What's your perspective on that?
That's another thing that, as a culture, I think we have entirely backwards. You know, I was about to use some graphic epithets and thought I shouldn't do that on the radio.
Yeah.
I thought about our political realm. And there's no shortage of it there.
Yes.
My. So,
yeah, but we're FCC controlled here.
Yes, I understand. I minded my words.
Good for you.
So we are taught as a culture, and this is probably more true for men still than women, to hide our vulnerability
mm-hmm.
and to act strong. This is just in reverse. Acting strong is acting. It's weak. Vulnerability, and by vulnerability, I mean feeling okay sharing your fears, mm-hmm. your insecurity, your self-doubt. Not hiding them, but sharing them. You see, the paradox, again, is if I share my insecurity, then I end up feeling less insecure.
Mm-hmm.
I was giving this a talk on this topic, and somewhere in the audience was an elderly woman who raised her hand, and she said meekly, "I feel very vulnerable about public speaking." So I brought her up to the podium and put her behind the microphone. And
of course she did.
That, right? Of course she did.
Right.
And then after a few moments, they said, "How do you feel?" She said, "I feel better." Well, of course, if you have shared what you're afraid of and you're not hiding from it, it loses its grip on you.
Right.
And it helps you develop genuine self-esteem because you've moved into the position that you're not going to hide from fear of what other people may think of you.
Yeah.
You see, people talk about judgment. My position is there's only one person that can judge me,
mm-hmm.
and they work in the courthouse and wear the long black robe.
Yes.
Everyone else are people with opinions. But if you elevate someone's opinion and turn it into a judgment, you've done that. They're
right.
not your judge.
Yeah. And I think about that situation, too, this elderly woman, you know, admitting in front of a crowd that she, you know, feels vulnerable for public speaking. There are so many people in the audience who will connect with that vulnerability because, you know, as humans, when we allow our vulnerability to be shown, other people, it sort of touches upon their vulnerability too, right?
The healing method for almost all things. I find that you said earlier in our discussion, you know, most people feel they're happy and content as they are. I'm not so sure about that.
Uh-huh.
They're not willing to express it because they think everyone else is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I work in workshops or seminars with large numbers of people, I find as soon as a few people start to share their vulnerable aspect, everyone else feels better and they open up. It's the human condition.
Uh-huh.
We have to stop hiding from each other.
Yeah.
We're all in the same soup.
Right. We have to go to another quick break, but more with Mel Schwartz here in just a few moments.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelm and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath to signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is. Sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show here in KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I love that song, Benny. And I'm loving this conversation today with Mel Schwartz. And Mel, before we go any further, because this is our last segment, I fear that we're going to have so much to talk about that we're going to run out of time here. Please share with our listeners how they can connect with you online and what events you've got coming up.
Well, my website is my name, MelSchwartz.com. MelSchwartz.com. You can find my email there, which is mel@melschwartz.com. My blog with the articles that you talked about, information on my book. I have some Facebook Live events coming up in the next couple of weeks, which you can learn about, where we'll be discussing aspects of the book. And I have a TEDx talk coming up in November, and that will get posted as well.
Great. And where is that TEDx talk?
It's going to be in Boston, perhaps at the Kennedy Library.
Oh, wonderful. I used to live in the Boston area many moons ago. Yes. Okay, so I want to just say to our listeners that your book lays things out in a very organized fashion, and you do a wonderful job, Mel, of connecting these quantum physics principles to our lives, and they're wonderful stories as well. And I think that we often learn by sort of watching other people's lives, sort of being the fly on the wall for their story and seeing how they shift. But you've got a lot of good information here about these tools to apply these principles for helping to shift our lives. How do we utilize all this to move forward in a positive way?
I asked myself that same question when I came to the end of the book, which is after taking the reader through this long, significant journey, what's the takeaway? So in my epilogue, I put together two words. Willful intention. Very often, we have the intention to change. But we're lacking the will. So think of it this way. You're out at sea in the sailboat, and the sail is down, and you want to move. So you hoist the sail. That's your intention. But the willfulness is the wind that goes into the sail. For me, the wind in the sail of your change and your thriving in your life is to integrate the principles of uncertainty and inseparability. Because when you do, they allow you to thrive in your relationships, develop effective communication, overcome fear and anxiety, and live in resilience.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn the tools, and then you set your intention, and you fill the willfulness with those principles.
Yeah.
And throw away the old rule book of what you should and shouldn't do,
mm-hmm.
because in large part, it's not working so well.
Right. And I think that people often, when they're talking about intention, people often think in terms of something that they want to manifest, and it's usually something external or some sort of achievement. Mm-hmm. What do you think are meaningful goals to move forward towards?
Well, in a way, I'll be a bit humble here and say it's probably not for me to tell others what meaningful goals are for them. But perhaps the litmus test is it should be, at times you want it to be more than just an external achievement,
mm-hmm.
although external achievement's rewarding.
Sure.
It's just, it fills you up for a while. I find that the goals I try to pursue are goals that give me connection, meaning,
mm-hmm.
and purpose in my life, because those don't evaporate. They're not fleeting. They stay with you.
Uh-huh.
So I can wake up every morning excited about what this new day is going to bring me. I'm not sure what it'll bring me,
mm-hmm.
but I am engaged in my life. It's a reality-making process. Quantum physics tells us nothing is stuck. It's all in flow.
Uh-huh.
It's reality making itself. So I try to live my life that way, too.
That's really exciting.
Reality making. Yes, it is. It's a kick. And it certainly will make you feel a lot younger than whatever your age is,
uh-huh.
because it's all full of possibility.
Right, right. You know, on the break, you and I were talking about this concept of the mind-body connection, and there's often, you know, the trio of mind-body-spirit discussed, and I know you talk about this in your book as well. What's your perspective on that?
I write that there is no mind-body connection. But hold on, what do I mean by that? There's no connection because there's no separation.
Uh-huh.
Whatever made us think mind and body was separate? Well,
uh-huh.
the answer really was Descartes, 17th century philosopher, told us so. But mind and body aren't separate. So if they're not separate, we need to go beyond thinking of the word connection, because connection implies separation, and you build
right.
a tunnel or a bridge. They're not separate. Mind, body, spirit, these are all different aspects, words, that comprise the entirety of our being.
Uh-huh.
It's important to integrate. See, I teach the reader to think in wholeness. Thinking in wholeness means that I want to see the whole.
Right.
I want to see the human condition. Maybe we can get narrow and use these different terms, but it's important not to create separate compartments and then think they are separate just because we created the compartments.
Mm-hmm. And I think that people have also learned to kind of judge themselves because, you know, that when they look at like one part of the whole, that somehow they're not, you know, living up to the potential, and particularly
yes.
the spirituality. And it just seems really detrimental to our development and expansion.
And to that end, it's important for us to always ask each other what we mean by the words.
Uh-huh.
What does the word
yes.
spiritual mean to you?
Uh-huh.
What does it mean to me? To come into a shared meaning so that one definition doesn't preclude another.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mel, can you share with our listeners a final thought in a minute or less?
Final thought would be around the term defining moments. I shared that I had a few in my life.
Uh-huh.
A defining moment is when you're poised, perhaps because of an insight. Most often we have insights and we let them fade over time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. If you have an insight and it's powerful, commit to it. Say to yourself, I'm changed as of this moment.
Uh-huh.
I am heading in this new direction, down this new road. That's a defining moment. And to do it, again, you're going to have to embrace uncertainty so you don't succumb to fear.
Uh-huh.
You're not supposed to know what's down that road, but you can venture down it.
That's beautiful. Okay, everybody, again, his latest book is called The Possibility Principle, and his website is melschwartz.com, M-E-L-S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z.com. Mel, it's been a joy having you here today, and I'm really excited about the work that you're doing. Thank you for joining us here. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.